Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger, and with us today we have Dr. Brian England, who is an Associate Dean of the School of Business and Economics, the Edward J. Prisbilla Chair of Business and Economics, and Ordinary Professor of Marketing. He teaches market research, market strategy, and other marketing electives in support of the BSBA and MSBA degrees. Prior to becoming an academic, he was a product development executive and served in a series of leadership positions for two Fortune 500 corporations. Later, he became president of a marketing consultation agency, England & Associates, which helped clients successfully introduce new products and services. Today, we're going to be discussing his book from Sophia Institute Press entitled Force for Good, The Catholic Guide to Business Integrity. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Well, thank you so much, Pete. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're quite welcome. Glad to have you. So to get started, for those of us unfamiliar, can you tell us a bit about what your book is about?
Very good place to start. St. John Paul II at one point said that Christians living a divided life, this idea that we're sensational Christians when we go to Mass on Sunday, but the rest of the week, by gosh, when we're trying to go out there and do battle with the rest of the world, we throw all caution to the wind and we compete. And we're not exactly very Christian in the way in which we do so. So this idea of a divided life, living one way on Sundays or Saturday night, if you go to a Saturday night liturgy, right. In a different way the rest of the week, is a significant problem that St. John Paul II talked about. And the book really is all about helping Catholics eliminate this idea of being a divided life. That is, bringing their faith, their understanding of their faith, the strongly held values that we have, into the workplace so that the workplace becomes better, so that we become literally the salt for the earth in the case of the businesses that we run and participate in.
Interesting. Now, in the beginning of the book, you talk about a new business venture that you had started with. You and your partners had this vision that it would, in essence, be a business like no other. It'd be ethically responsible, that you would run the business the quote-unquote right way. However, that changed quickly, and it was a test of sorts for you. What exactly happened in that venture?
It certainly was a test for me, and I think a lot of us, have some naive ideas about what business leadership and running a business is all about. Oftentimes, when we are in positions of support, we watch our leadership and we wonder, they really don't know what they're doing, or they're not doing a good job with it. And in this particular case, there were three friends and I got together to start a business, and it was a fairly sizable business, an ongoing business, that is. It was a business that we were acquiring. And we naively said, oh, my gosh, we're gonna do everything the right way. But we didn't specify what the right way was. I mean, we didn't come to an agreement amongst ourselves. And then what happened, as you begin to try to clean up all of the problems that a business that was for sale had in terms of production issues and equipment issues and marketing issues, and then when you're doing all of that kinds of stuff and trying to satisfy the banks who are lending you money to make this whole thing work, suddenly you had to start doing some short-term thinking. You had to start making some cutting the things very closely in order to show that you're making progress, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. And what happened, and I talk about it in the book, is a situation where we made an error, and then we decided not to report the error until the next reporting period. And then the next reporting period came around, and we said, you know, it would be better if we said that we didn't discover this error until later. And I said, no, hold on a second. This is not exactly the right way to run a business. This isn't what we said we were going to do. And the disappointing thing here, and what's embarrassing to me at that stage, I was not able to convince these friends of mine who were my partners that what we were doing was the wrong thing to do. I couldn't convince them that there are certain right ways to go. You know, there are the proper way to run things and to do. And here we were really cutting corners, just like some of the big corporations that we had a prior experience with. Mm. What I learned from that is that it's really important that a business identify the standards that they are going to uphold, the values that they're going to adopt, not only the standards and values, but also the procedures that they're going to use to make sure that, in fact, those standards are carried out, day-to-day operations, and that businesses really do the right thing every time.
Very interesting. Now, do you have any other experiences you can share beyond this one that you were personally involved in where you witnessed business practices that were perhaps less than stellar?
I do talk about some other issues in the book. One that comes to mind is a situation where I was working in an environment, and my boss one day called me in the office, and he basically said, I want you to fire so-and-so. And the so-and-so, the individual that worked for me, happened to be one that was a smoker, okay? And he obeyed the rules for the company, and he went outside the building when he smoked. But it's true, when he came back into the building, there was an odor of smoke about him. This was offensive to my boss, and he said, fire him. We don't need him around. You know, well, of course, as a Catholic, I mean, I'm thinking, wait a minute, if you're going to fire somebody, you've got to have grounds for that fire. You've got to have this individual's performance has to be somehow subpar or not as agreed. Something's got to be wrong here for a basis for a termination.
Right.
And I said, this is a stellar employee. I don't understand how. And then this boss basically said, well, listen, if you can't figure out a way to fire him, I'll bring somebody else in that, you know, that can. In other words, you're going to be gone too. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. This put me in a real pickle position. And I mean, I'm thinking, okay, how do I figure out firing? And then at one point I said to myself, no, this is wrong. You just can't do this. You got to stand up for the employee, which is what I did. And I, after much prayer and I guess you'd say some stealing and courage, or building up a courage to be able to go in and tell the boss, nope. If you want to fire me, you go right ahead. But I'm not going to get rid of a stellar employee just because of one defect that it's, you know, we can work on him. We can put him in another office. if you want to relocate him out to the plant, we can do that. But human dignity requires that we treat people effectively and fairly.
Correct.
Now,
lest people think your book's an entirely gloom and doom scenario, do you have any examples of businesses that were the opposite of this, where there were scenarios during your research for this book where you would consider these businesses or this example of being a good example of how a business should behave?
Absolutely. And I have quite a few examples in the book that I've come across over the years. Now, the one challenge I will say in this, that I've been at this for a while, and I do realize that as soon as I tell my students or I tell business executives, hey, watch what this business is doing, they're doing things the right way, suddenly they fall out of bed, so to speak, and somehow it comes along and they foul up, you know.
Yeah.
So we do have to recognize that this is not heaven. We are in the earth. Mm-hmm. And in order to be a good, ethical business with integrity, one has to work at it every day. And you can fall off the horse. The important thing is to be able to analyze those situations where you get screwed up and get yourself back in the position to be good every day. So what's a good business? Gosh, you know, Art Cioka was president and CEO of a company called The Wine Group for many years. He's now retired, and I've come to know him, through our university. He's He has given us a gift to name a a center for entrepreneurship on our campus. But he tells me, unlike the story that I had where I couldn't convince three friends to do the right thing, he tells me that when he started his business, the wine group, he had a group of folks, and he said, here's the standards. We're going to make sure that we do the right thing every time. And lo and behold, just about the first month of operation, they had a batch of product that was not meeting the specifications that they'd set. But it was the kind of product that, well, one, the business was previously owned by a major corporation. They would have shipped it anyway, you know, because there was nothing wrong with it technically. I mean, it wasn't going to cause people to get sick or anything like that. But it was, it just didn't have the flavor and the taste that was expected. But he said, no, we're not going to do this. In spite of the high cost associated with a fledgling business, we're going to do things the right way. And that demonstration and that story stayed with employees for many, many years. And it's the idea that any time there is a situation where someone in their job has a decision to make about whether they do this or I let something slide by, they remember back and they basically reenact that story by doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the wine group has grown into a very successful wine business, one of the largest producers of wine in the world. Their Franza brand, I think, is one of the leading wines, I think, sold in the U.S. now.
All right. Well, we'll take a break here with that good example of business. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back. Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Paying too much for your healthcare costs? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. For more info, call 844-313-4999. Again, that's 844-313-4999, or visit SolidarityHealthShare.org. That's SolidarityHealthShare.org. Back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger. We're here today with Brian England, the author of Force for Good, the Catholic Guide to Business Integrity. We talked about some bad businesses. We talked about some good businesses the first segment. So one of the overarching themes in your book, Brian, is you know, bringing our Catholic faith to business, as we discussed in the first segment. And to do that, we need to apply the cardinal virtues to business. So how does one go about doing that?
Very good question. In addition to the cardinal virtues, let's not lose the thought. One needs to basically ascribe to the basic moral issues, I should say. So there's basic morality of truth and goodness and beauty that we ascribe to. And then the virtues, the cardinal virtues. And then the third area is Catholic social teaching, and I hope we get into that.
Yes,
well,
we will.
But cardinal virtues, those, of course, as we know, are the hinge virtues. Those are the virtues that kind of drive all the other virtues. And I think oftentimes in business, we say, sure, virtues are important, but then we completely eliminate the discussion, and we never get around to actually implementing them or putting them into the business. Now, there are some companies that are taking a better approach to this, and I think one company is it's a company that serves the Children's First is the name of it. I lost the name of it there. Children's First, and this is a firm that basically they take care of children of the parents that are now that are going to work. So it's basically It's a child care organization. And they kind of languished, and they weren't very successful until the CEO at that time had an idea. He said, let's understand what virtues that the parents would like to engage with their children, and also what virtues they expect from someone who's taking care of their kids on a, you know, a daycare basis. So they did some study, and then they also involved not only their customers, but also their employees, and they started to identify virtues like patience, optimism, commitment, perseverance. And these were the virtues that it seemed to resonate with their customers. They said, you know, we really want to have care providers that have these kinds of virtues. So then they started a training program. They called it the Human Quality Initiative. And they began to, in effect, train their employees to engage in these, to learn about, to practice, and to become, get a habit of these virtues. Mm-hmm. And it was the kind of thing, it was almost like a magic formula, because when they would do the next survey of customers, those were the virtues and those were the things that were coming forth from customers and said, hey, this is what we're getting when we're putting our children with your firm. So you see, here's a situation where a company is actually training for virtue, the important virtues for their particular market. And, of course, that results in a better quality of service for customers. The customers are now more brand loyal, more loyal. They're responding appropriately and continuing to, place their children with this firm. Yeah. Interesting how that works effectively in terms of virtue.
Very interesting. So one of the things that really popped up in my mind while reading your book is I'm now self-employed, but prior to that, I left my job in May of 2017. Prior to that, I come from a manufacturing environment, and I was in that environment for 20 years in both office and factory floor roles throughout that tenure. So it seemed to me that a lot of time profit outweighed the good of the worker. And that's somewhat of an old school mentality, I think, that in some manufacturing environments is still common today. So how do manufacturers or any business really fix that?
They fix it by talking about all of the other aspects of business, the other important objectives, the human objectives, the moral objectives that businesses also need to accomplish. Sure, as the church informs us, profits are an indication, it's a measure of how well a business is doing, but it's not the only measure. And if we put too much emphasis on trying to, improve or increase profits, what we do is we often miss the people-oriented kinds of things that are involved, because ultimately, businesses are all about people. Mm-hmm. And if you short-circuit the process, if you don't treat people with dignity, if you don't do the Catholic social teaching ideas of solidarity, subsidiarity, common good, ultimately you hurt customers, you hurt your employees, and ultimately business doesn't perform as well as it would have had you not shorted those areas.
Right, and we're going to get into those areas in a bit, but I want to share my one bad business story.
Okay.
It comes from that environment. And, you know, again, as I was reading through your book, you talked about organizations following natural law. And I worked for a guy that was very work oriented. And in fact, I recall a pre-Christmas shutdown meeting where the statement was made, and this is a quote, "Christmas is on hold until this problem is solved," end quote. Now, I can tell you everyone in that room walked out of that room and under their breath said, "Yeah, right, buddy." But that became a reflection of the company that day. That stuck with everyone in that room that day, and that became the face of the company from that day forward, that, you know, this was more important than someone's faith. So how does a worker in that situation deal with that?
And if we wait until the big thing happens like this, the one place where it gets off the rails, we may be a little bit late. What we need to do is have some influence on the workforce, on the business prior to that time. And I would suggest that introducing virtue into the workplace is very interesting and, very appropriate. I don't know anything about the situation that you just described, but let's think about it. Suppose the employee, maybe not you, but somebody else in that organization, would over a period of time tell the boss, gee, it would be really good for us to learn a little bit more about virtue. Or, you know, human dignity is so important with respect to brand loyalty and that kind of stuff. What are some of the things that we can be doing to improve the way we look at people and, you know, how people first, you know, where we put people in the whole scheme of things? You know, teamwork is so important in an organization. What are we doing to build our team skills? Personal responsibility is obviously important. What are the things that we're doing with personal responsibility? Of course, that's the subsidiarity kind of idea. I think as you and I, as Catholics in a workforce, need to stir the pot a little bit, get the working environment upgraded a little bit more as we go along. And I think if we do that kind of thing, I'm hopeful, at any rate, that that boss will have learned some things somewhere along the line and won't take the line in the sand, you know, nobody can go home for Christmas because we got to solve this thing first.
Right. So I think that segues nicely into the four pillars of Catholic social doctrine. I'd like to cover those today. And you discuss them in your book. And you have a really nice graphic showing all four of them pointing towards a theme, and that theme being good business, which illustrates that all four of these are inputs to good business. So let's go through all four of these inputs. We'll hit the first one here before we go to break. And we'll see how they influence that common goal of good business. And the first one is subsidiarity. Can you tell us a bit about that input?
So I call subsidiarity the personal responsibility principle. And the reason I do that is, gosh, subsidiarity is kind of a weird term. It's hard to pronounce, and it almost sounds Roman, and maybe this sounds like something the church has come up with, and what do they know? It doesn't cause people to say, hey, that sounds like something good I want to find out about. It's more like, give me something else, something that that I can apply to my business. That sounds like something that, you know, a monk came up with or something, you know. Well, subsidiarity is really this idea of individual responsibility. It's the idea that an individual has a role, and if the boss micromanages, I'm talking about a business situation, if the boss micromanages and basically keeps changing the game, And all that does is it results in disappointment, it results in confusion, and it results in the idea that, hey, I want to be in charge of my space. We were created for that kind of a thing. We're created in the image and likeness of God, and God's a creator. We are creators individually in our own small way. But if somebody micromanages, it takes all the creativity out of that particular position or that job that we have. And when we do that, it really makes for boring jobs. And what it does is it gets us to park our mind elsewhere, and all we're doing is while we're at work, we're thinking about going fishing, or we're thinking about the baseball game, or going, you know, whatever it is, you know.
Exactly.
To do.
Because work becomes.
I learned this, you know, early on. My first job was as an industrial engineer. My job was to basically get the manufacturing line up and running at speed. Mm-hmm. And I remember in a situation, I talk about this in the book, where there was a woman named Darlene on the assembly line. There were eight people in on one small assembly line. They were assembling wiring harnesses at a plant in Warren, Ohio. And Darlene, we were trying to get this Cadillac line. It was a product for a Cadillac, trying to get it up to speed. And so I'm there, I'm saying, what's wrong, guys? We're only at 60%. What's happening here? And Darlene's complaining. She says, the fixture is passing by my station faster than it passes by the other girls. You know. Well, I pull out my stopwatch, and I time all the stations, and I show her, and then she complains that my stopwatch is wrong. And I'm scratching my head and saying, how do I convince somebody that's illogical like this? Finally, I kind of threw up my hands, and I said, Darlene, what do you want? She says, I want you to move this fixture over to here. So there was, I said, that doesn't make sense because then you've got a longer pull and it's going to take more time. Mm-hmm. Well, she argued with me. So I said, all right, we're going to fix it because I was going to try to give her something. Mm-hmm. Well, then when we came back, I noticed what she was doing is she was putting she was doing her job differently than it had been drawn up. She was making two grabs at once with both hands and pulling it in a different fashion, making operation out of the way the new fixture had been placed. And now she was up to full speed. And it was just like night and day. So here she was doing the job differently than the engineers had planned it. And she was being illogical in the way she was approaching it. But now it was hers. See, she put her stamp of approval on this job by making it her way, mm-hmm. and now it was working for her. And in many cases, that's what happens to all of us. If we try to over-specify, what individuals are supposed to do and how they do it, we end up pulling away all of the creativity that the employee brings to the process. And we end up causing them to be vacant.
Yeah.
You know, Gallup poll, they ran a poll. I saw this recently. 30% of Americans are actively engaged in their current jobs. 70% don't want to be there. Hmm. Now, can you imagine? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're basically running operations basically at 30% potential. You need the potential of all the employees. You need them active. And the key to that is this principle of subsidiarity, personal responsibility. It's the idea of giving them all of the resources, the training, everything they need, and the say-so, so that they own their job. When that happens, wonderful things happen in terms of the way the employees produce.
Yep, amazing. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Pumpkin spice, southern pecan, apple pie, and maple French toast are just a few of the delicious fall coffee flavors from Grim Bean Coffee Company. With over 20 coffee options, Grim Bean has the perfect coffee for you. Let Grim Bean Coffee Company deliver artisan whole bean or ground coffee directly to you. Visit grimbeancoffee.com today for 10% off your order with the code BREADBOX at checkout. Experience the best with Grim Bean Coffee Company. Back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger. We're here today with Brian England, the author of Force for Good, The Catholic Guide to Business Integrity from Sophia Institute Press. And Brian, we started covering the four pillars of Catholic social doctrine and how they apply to business. We wrapped up last segment talking about subsidiarity, and now we're going to move on to human dignity. How does that apply to business?
So human dignity, obviously, is the people-first principle. And what this basically says is that people are much more important than equipment and you know, property and land and that kind of thing. You know, I remember in my earlier career, we bought this brand-new piece of equipment in this business that I was with, and we were really proud of it. And, my gosh, we had signs on it that basically, you know, painted it up really nice. And we put all the maintenance into this thing. There was all, I mean, expensive stuff that we were doing all around it because we wanted to make sure that this expensive equipment was going to last a long time. We weren't paying attention to the humans that were around it, but what was really interesting about this is 5 years later, that equipment was obsolete because something else was involved in it and was worthless. I mean, it kind of God's way of laughing at the whole thing, saying, hey, you guys, you didn't realize this, but, you know, the equipment isn't worth anything. It's the people that count on this whole thing. And really, that's the idea with human dignity. We know that humans have a soul, an immortal soul. I mean, that's a Catholic belief, and so we Catholics have this inside track knowledge about the importance of the individual. And even though we understand that some people are abrasive and some people are hard to deal with, we also understand that they have this infinite value. That they are created in such a way that God loves them very much, and we are expected to figure out how to love them as well. And this translates right down to the way we treat others in the business environment.
So the next one you have, the third input to what ends up being a good business, is solidarity.
Exactly. And solidarity, I call the teamwork principle, because the whole idea of solidarity, and, you know, on a Catholic mind, usually when we hear the word solidarity, we think of, oh, let's see, Lech Walesa, Poland, all of the stuff that went on in Europe many years ago. And then we start thinking about, okay, solidarity with the poor, we should be, you know, donating some money to the poor people in the world. Yes, it means that, but it also means good teamwork. It also means that when a team functions effectively, certainly when everybody treats others as team members and treats others well, and when someone has got the hot hand, we feed them a ball, you know, because they're going to score. And when somebody's having some difficulty, man, we're going to help them out to get them back so that they're a contributing member of the team again. So that's kind of the idea in the business sense of things. This idea that, we want to do teamwork effectively. Now, the church has really learned a lot of things about solidarity over the years. And I have to admit, my I have a daughter who is a Carmelite nun, so she's in a monastery. And the Carmelites are really good. The whole monastery system is really good at cross-training. Now, we've heard some things about cross-training in business. Cross-training is the idea that I know your job, you know my job. That way, if I'm having an off day or I'm sick or I have to do something else, you can fill in.
Right.
And we don't lose a beat, so to speak. We can continue on. That certainly is what happens in a monastery, because my daughter knows every job in the whole place because they keep rotating everybody through so that everybody knows everybody else's job. This way, when somebody is sick or has to go off to the doctor or whatever the reason, somebody else can fill in so that the life of the community goes on and it continues effectively. So this is one aspect of solidarity. Another aspect of solidarity, I'm thinking there's a company, and there are many companies like this, but there's one in Philadelphia, Rose's Pizza. Rose's Pizza. Mm. And the young man that started this business, he came up with the idea that they were in a depressed area of Philadelphia, downtown depressed area, I guess, and a number of folks that were on their last, dime, so to speak, needing something to eat, would come in and, try to beg for some pizza or something like that. So he said, wait a minute, I know how to do this. And he developed a program so that customers, paying customers, if they wanted to, could buy an additional slice of pizza, put up a little coupon kind of thing on the bulletin board, along with a note of have a slice on me type of a thing. Mm. So that anybody who needed something to eat could come in, pull the note from the bulletin board and redeem it for a slice of pizza. Mm. Now what this did is it got everybody enthused about their whole idea of showing solidarity for those people who are less fortunate than we are. And it became kind of a thing that attracts business in the idea that people want to go to Rose's Pizza so that they can, use their change to buy some pizza for somebody that is less fortunate. Hmm. That solidarity thing going on.
And then the last pillar of Catholic social doctrine is common good.
And common good is maybe the one that's a little bit more difficult than some of the other ones. It's this idea, common good. Oftentimes when we think about common good, we think that's kind of like apple pie and ice cream and milk. Hey, I'll sign up for that.
Yeah.
And it seems to lack any kind of a focus on what we're talking about. But but the church talks about common good is this idea that we need to do things that will assist future generations as well. So this idea of a common good is that we do things that help everyone become more and reach their fulfillment more effectively. Everyone, individuals and groups, but the people that will come after us as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, how does this all apply to business?
Mm-hmm.
And I think businesses are concerned about common good when they say, is there anything that we're doing or not doing that we could do in our normal operations that would help the world become a better place, in addition to what we're doing in terms of product or service?
Mm-hmm.
So we might say, here's a process that gives us marginal improvement in terms of cost advantage, but it really makes life more, it makes the environment cleaner, or it makes it so that, the world is a better place for one reason or another. And those things we might then implement, even though the cost isn't the biggest element to the mm-hmm. whole thing.
Interesting.
So common good is It can also be considered to be the stewardship principle. It's the idea that, all right, we have been given, God has allowed us to have all sorts of resources and wealth, and especially businesses, we've got the capability to do some really significant things.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to make sure that the way we use those resources actually helps and doesn't hinder
right.
society.
Right.
That's the idea with Common Good.
There we go. So we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back to wrap up our conversation with Brian England and his book, Force for Good, Catholic Guide to Business Integrity. Hi, I'm Pete Sox, the host of Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. Head on over to my show page at breadboxmedia.com and support my show and our work here at Breadbox Media by becoming a premium member today. And we believe it's more about giving than receiving. When you become a premium member for just $9.99 a month, you unlock incredible discounts from our sponsors like Rugged Rosaries, Catholic Books Direct, Lifeboat Coffee, the Mass Box and the Harrisburg Senators, just to name a few. And it's even better. Every month, Breadbox Media chooses a nonprofit organization to partner with, and 10% of every premium membership is dedicated to that nonprofit. Join the revolution in Catholic media. Become a premium member by visiting my page today. Back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. I'm here with Brian England today talking about his book, Force for Good, The Catholic Guide to Business Integrity. Brian, one of the things that kept popping up in my mind as I was reading your book is, one of the problems I think that even makes this type of book necessary is the materialism we have in this world today. And it's basically fighting businesses on two ends. It's hitting them at the top down from the business owner themselves and what they may be striving to achieve. And it's hitting them from the bottom up from the employees that in some sense, might be scrambling for as much overtime or the biggest chunk of money they can get to support this materialism we see, this accumulation of things. So how do we wrestle this beast? How do we avoid the trap of an unnatural desire to accumulate massive amounts of money? And as we record this, even though it'll be a few weeks till this goes up live, we are in the Christmas season as we record this. So how do we avoid being Ebenezer Scrooges?
And that's a really difficult question to answer. I mean, consumerism or materialism is this idea that somehow manufactured goods are going to be the key to our happiness, our individual happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think eventually we sort this out, maybe. Eventually we sort it out in our minds saying, really, goods don't make me happy. What makes me happy are, my significant others, my family, my wife, my children. And those things are really important. Or it's my coworkers, and that's also another aspect of how we grow as an individual and how we have a feeling of fulfillment and success, I think, in life. So the virtues are a key aspect in terms of controlling our appetites, and I think that's an important aspect to what we should be doing as business folks, developing virtue not only as individuals ourselves, But the virtues also apply to businesses and the way in which businesses operate. I'm really excited about what REI, the outdoor retailer, is doing. And, of course, they have a Black Friday policy. Hmm. Now, Black Friday is the day after Thanksgiving, and it's the day when craziness goes on in terms of people going out there and consuming as much as they possibly can, buying what they can get, finding all the deals and late hours and all of this kind of stuff. And what REI did was they said, guess what? We think that this has gone too far. We're going to close our doors on Friday after Thanksgiving, and we're going to send all our employees home. In fact, employees are invited to do something nice outdoors, enjoy God's creation. And we'd like our consumers, our customers, to do the very same thing as well. If more companies would take that kind of an approach, we would at least have people just take a second thought at, mm-hmm. Oh, wait a minute, this is an interesting message. There is a big, beautiful world out there. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should do something other than, you know, get in the car or get online and try to be trying to find the best deal on, the latest music
right.
or whatever I'm looking for.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think we've seen, particularly this year, in previous years, we've seen retailers opening up on Thanksgiving Day, and this year they seem to back off of that and not be open Thanksgiving Day. So hopefully we see some kind of good trend coming in the years ahead.
Absolutely. I think, too, that what we're about as businesses is this idea of service to others. Mm-hmm. And in serving others, that means we should be looking out for their ultimate goods, their good. And that means we should not be recommending or trying to incite them to buy things that really aren't going to help them short term, might be helping our bottom line today. But ultimately, long term, if we're really good for customers, they're going to keep coming back to buy from us, you know, in future, mm-hmm. Future days.
Right.
And we're going to develop that brand loyalty, and it's ultimately going to be a good thing for our firm as well.
Right.
I think where it all starts is the individual. I think we as individuals who run businesses, we who work in businesses, we need to look at the Christmas process and say, all right, what are we trying to achieve here? Is there some way when we can be a little bit more moderate in terms of what we do in engaging in this consumerism?
Right.
And at the same time, look out for others who are really in need, not so much in terms of product need, but more in terms of human need.
Correct.
And if we start out from there, I think it's going to eventually lead over into the overall businesses and the businesses that we operate,
mm-hmm.
where we're going to be looking for ways to help the world, get through these kinds of seasons in more of a reflective and less helter-skelter kind of a manner.
Mm-hmm. And as we wind down here, because we're starting to run out of time, I did want to mention this. One of the things about the book, and in our conversation, we keep talking business, business, business. And it is indeed, your book is aimed toward business, people involved in business. But the one area I think that this book would also be helpful is you talk to 10 in the one chapter about 10 steps to ensuring integrity. One of the hats I wear in my other life is a township supervisor. You know, those 10 steps of integrity, I can see applying them to that in my dealings with the public, in my dealings with my other board members as well. So I think this book has wide implications beyond just business. And I think it's important that I wanted to get that out there to you, so that you know that I'm looking at it that way, but to listeners as well.
All right. Thank you, Pete. You know, you're not the first one that has made that statement. I've had two others that have said, when are you going to write your book about politics? That's where we really need some integrity. Well, that's not my field at all, so I'm not going to write that one.
But again, it's applicable to that. If someone wishes to pick it up and apply it to that, it's definitely a good read for that as well. Now,
sure.
as we... close out today, I want to give you an opportunity here to discuss what exactly is the Bush School of Business and Economics that you're involved with at Catholic University of America.
So the Bush School is an old department. It's kind of under a new realm, so to speak. We began in 1895 as a Department of Economics, and as a result of Rerum Novarum, the encyclical by Pope Leo XIII, and his concern for the conditions of labor, and so we started an economics department to kind of look at that. And so that department kind of grew into a business department, and then all the way until 2013, that's when it became a school. And it's kind of unusual for a business school to start at a university like Catholic University, where it's been very steeped in theology, philosophy, liberal arts. But I think there was a great deal of excitement that finally came around to the idea that, you know, if we can apply Catholic ideas to business and we can do that effectively, then we're going to create a business school like no other business school in the world. And so that's what we've been all about. We've been fortunate in terms of gathering some folks who are excited about supporting it. We had a fairly large gift in 2016, which resulted in the naming of the school, the Tim and Steph Bush School of Business and Economics. And we've had other gifts that have been involved in providing for the renovation of an older building on campus, so it'll be state-of-the-art for a business school building, the creation of a center of entrepreneurial development, and in quite a few other initiatives that have resulted in some additional master's programs and certainly an expanding student body in business. So the exciting thing to be a part of something like this is that we recognize we are doing God's work, that we hope that we can be a catalyst in terms of improving everything that is done in the world. And it just starts with one person who talks to another, and there's a ripple effect that goes on. And, it keeps attracting more and more folks who are interested in the kinds of things that we're concerned about.
Great. So as we close out, where can people find your book, Force for Good, The Catholic Guide to Business Integrity?
So us is one place that one can go. And, of course, Amazon.com, I suppose, is easy. and also in your local Catholic bookstores. Most Catholic bookstores will have this book.
Yes. And any closing thoughts?
Gosh, as we look at what we're doing on a day-to-day basis, the first question we should do is say, how do we live out our faith in our work? And is there something I can do tomorrow to move in the right direction? And if we do that, I think it won't be too long before we become a force for good in this world.
Awesome. Great advice. Brian, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
And thank you, Pete.
You're quite welcome. And with that, we're out of time. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.